All right, let's have a few moments of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and wisdom to others.
Where do I want to go with this? I'm Tarek. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tarek.
I'm going to try to talk about steps 3, 4, and 5. In the form of stories. And, you know, we're a storytelling society. We're a verbal society. There's a lot of healing, and you know, I always wonder if that's the right word. Like, you know, Carl Jung talks a lot about our shadow and these things that have been recessed within ourselves that become part of our unconscious, which is something that heavily influences our behavior, and we're not aware of it. But there's also the things like I can sit up here and tell you my default setting is I'm lazy. I am lazy. I can sit and binge watch Netflix. I mean, very quickly, I can go into like a 6-7 hour, you know. I am a very arrogant person. I can be. And I know these things about myself. I know I can be a very controlling person. I can be a very, I'm full of assumptions. I know these things about myself, and I acknowledge them. And the wild thing is, there's this, the more in touch we are with some of our hardwiring, the less likely we are to act down in it. But if I'm repressing that, like, oh, I got to put on this front that I'm the exact opposite of all those things will manifest in my life on a regular basis. And through being okay with, like, there's a guy, man, back in the day, his name was Joe Hawk, and he used to say, he's like, you know, you got to become okay. Please excuse the language I'm about to use. You got to be okay with those parts of yourself that are always going to be fucked up. You got to be okay. You know, there are just some things that sometimes I don't know if they're part of the environment and the influences that I've had in my life, or they're literally part of my genetic makeup. I don't know. And so we sit here and we share our experiences. And one of the things I want to talk about in trying to tell these stories around 3 and 5, because, you know, the stories are how we integrate those parts of ourselves. Because I hear a piece. You share a piece of your story, and I become okay with this thing having occurred in my life. You share a piece of your story, and I become okay with that having occurred in my life. I integrate, right? What did alcoholism and drug addiction do? They robbed me of my humanity, right? They slowly tore away at my humanity, and they dismembered me. They literally ripped chunks away and buried my soul, right? Very, very dark place that the soul goes to. And so now I'm listening to your stories, and there's a little light that's coming in to my soul through your stories. But here's the paradox. Our stories are our problems. We attach to the story. Have you ever thought it was interesting how we ask people to tell their stories? We don't say state the facts about your life. We say tell the story. Tell the story and how you interpret what happened to you. So it is a very beneficial thing to tell the stories. But at the end of the day, the stories in my mind, Lindsay did such a great job of describing them. Those stories is what I'm up against. And I got to let them go. I got to let go of the story. And so I want to read something out of the 12 and 12. Remember the statement I made last night. The big book is much more inspirational than the 12 and 12. But the 12 and 12 is much more insightful than the big book. At least this is what I believe. And, you know, it says that steps 3 calls for affirmative action. Isn't that weird? We always thought there was no action in those first 3 steps. Where it's only by action that we can cut away the self-will, which has blocked the entry of God. Or I like to say the emergence of God, the higher power, into our lives. Faith, to be sure, is necessary, but faith alone can avail nothing. We can have faith yet keep God entirely out of our lives. Therefore, our problem now becomes just how and by what specific means shall we be able to let him in or tap that unsuspected inner resource. Step three represents our first attempt to do this. In fact, the effectiveness of the whole AA program will rest on how well and earnestly we have tried to come to a decision. That's it. The decision. The perfect desire that I will defer to God. The perfect desire that I will defer to God. I don't want to do that. What about me? Right? I want to be involved. I want to take a little bit of credit. It's like, so last year, I'm a charitable person. I love to donate every month. And one of the things I donate to is the gym in my neighborhood. I have this gym membership that I never use, so now it's become a donation. and it's still there, coming out of my bank account every month. So last November, I started going to the gym, and I went consistently from 2 to 4 days a week from November to April. Not once did I ask for God's help. I got this one, God. All right, take a knee, man. I got the gym. I can do the gym on my own. All right. And I did it. It never occurred to me to ask God for help. Because, you know, what's that old saying? God won't do for you what you can do for yourself. What if God just wants our help with everything anyway? Remember last night I said humility is anything that increases the distance between me and self-sufficiency. Humility. Anytime I'm distancing myself from self-sufficiency. What did I do when I went to the gym from November to April? I did something completely based on self-sufficiency. Anything that increases self-sufficiency increases my pride. And so I start to ask myself, well, I didn't need God to get back into the gym. What else don't I need God for? What else don't I need God for? Because what I don't want to be is the hole in the donut, a non-entity. And that's what he's about to talk to in the next page, right? So he says, why is it we have such a hard time? Yes, respecting alcohol and drugs, I guess I have to be dependent upon AA and this higher power. But in all other matters, I must still maintain my independence, right? Like God is some like Bush League pinch hitter, like Charlie used to say. You know, we want him to get us out of the hardest things, man. But when it comes to the stuff like going to the gym or quitting smoking cigarettes or quitting vaping, I'm like, I got this. Take a knee. We're good, God. Nothing is going to turn me into a non-entity. If I keep making this decision to have this perfect desire to turn my life and my will over to the care of something with a capital S or somebody with a capital L, somebody else, capital S, what will become of Tarek? I'm going to end up like that damn hole in the donut. This, of course, is the process by which instinct and logic always seek to bolster egotism, and so frustrate spiritual development. The trouble is that this kind of thinking takes no real account of the facts, and the facts seem to be these. The more we become willing to depend on the higher power, the more free and independent we actually become. Therefore, dependence, as AA perceives it, is really a means of gaining true independence of the spirit. So this is what I was talking about last night. It's like, you know, total dependence upon God equals freedom. And it's so counterintuitive. You know, and I had my experience, you know, those drug trafficking charges and how they just vanished. I had my buy-in moment when I was standing in that studio apartment and I realized I was the byproduct of a miracle that occurred on Mother's Day, 1935. You know, I'm a product of that miracle. And I was experiencing something that wouldn't be possible. We're seconds and inches away from not being here. I haven't done that talk yet this weekend, but that's one of my favorite things to talk about is how close we are all. So many little things had to take place at precisely the right time in the right space for us to be here on this date, October 4th, 2025, at the Kentucky Dam Village. And so we have these buy-in moments and this desire, you know, the perfect desire to make the decision. Not that I have the power to complete the decision-making process, I don't think. And this all came to me, was thrust upon me in 2013, I got to do a weekend with these two gentlemen. They just passed away last year, Bob Olson and Gary Brown. And I grew very close to Bob Olson. And I stayed in touch with him, and I asked him to take me through the steps. And this was at the end of 2013. And we start going through the book. You know, there was a group of guys out of Denver, Colorado that I was just so fascinated with, and he was my connection to all of them, right? And so I was like a kid in a candy store. And he shared so much with me. He took me through the steps. And we get up to step three. I'll never forget this. And I don't know if I'm going to have enough time to tell this whole story. So we get up to step three. And we're sitting there. This was back before Zoom. It was Skype back in the day. And so we were on a Skype call. And he said, Tarek, when you think of God's will, what comes to mind? And I was a very good student, right? I had good sponsors. You know, I think of being a servant for God. You know, I'm a spearhead for God's ever advancing creation, and I'm here to help God's kids and to live in the love and the light and to be confident and to know I'm a child of God and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's just sitting there like Bob would do, and he says, "Let me ask you a question." I was married at the time. I had a stepdaughter. And he knew about this. He goes, if your stepdaughter gets a terminal illness, could that be God's will? If you were in a car accident tomorrow and you're paralyzed from the waist down and you can no longer provide for your family and you're put on disability, could that be God's will? If your parents die tomorrow, could that be God's will? He just took me down this long list of things. I had closed off half of reality to the idea that it could be part of God's will. God good, everything else bad. So he said, what I want you to do for the next week is I want you to place an altar in front of you. And what are you willing to put on that altar for God? What are you willing to offer up to God? What are you willing to sacrifice? That was one of the most uncomfortable exercises. So I had to think of all of, not only like the beautiful, the loving, the freedom, the joyous part of God, I had to think of this other aspect of reality. The things I don't want to have happen. I had to think about those. And so I took this third step. I took the third step in January of 2014, and so Ralph and me talk about a lot of the peaks and valleys that we go through in life and what they mean and how they impact our spiritual development and how a lot of the spiritual development gets put on steroids during the valleys, right? We're forced to take God's hand and walk back up the mountain. And so I remember I took the third step in January. We had an ice storm. And I slipped in my driveway and I hurt my back. Or I had a pinched nerve in my back. Like a week after that or 2 weeks after that. And I'm like, this series of events that took place after I made this third step decision and I put everything on the altar. You got to be careful. You made that third step decision. You're sort of opening Pandora's box here. You really are. And so I got a kidney stone. Anybody here had a kidney stone before? Right? They rush me to the hospital. Well, no, my colleague rushes me to the hospital. They strap me down, and they pump me full of morphine. This is January of 2014, guys. I haven't had that feeling course through my veins in my life in a long time. Yeah. So I pass this kidney stone, but I am now standing at that precipice again, right? And they give me the pain meds, and my former wife, she guided me through that experience. A couple months later, I come home with my stepdaughter, and there's a burglar in the house, okay? And that experience in itself is pretty wild. And so now I've got a wife and a daughter who's terrified to stay in our home, all right? He rushes out the back door in the basement, right? They don't want to live in this house. Here I am, 7 years sober. Remember, I get sober, I go to the little studio apartment, but eventually I have such a high dollar amount in financial amends that I have to move back into my parents' basement so I could pay back all the money I owed. And I got free of that basement in April of 2011, right? And here I am, it's like April of 2014, I'm moving back into mom's basement, except this time with wife and stepdaughter in tow. Not where I pictured my life at 7 years sober. Right. So I injured my knee playing basketball, and I go in to have this surgery. And they're like, oh, you're going to be good. You're going to be good. You're going to be on crutches for 3 to 5 days. I come out of the surgery, and I'm informed that the cartilage, I have very little of my meniscus and cartilage left. And so I'm going to be on crutches for like 6 to 8 weeks. And I go into this depression, right? Go into this deep depression. And then I find out, like my sinuses have polyps, right? And so I met the doctor. She puts the camera in my sinuses, and she goes too far. And if she doesn't go too far, she doesn't find the tumor that's on my vocal cord. And so now I've got this mass that's on my vocal cord. And I had a real raspy voice up until this point, which is pretty wild. Never knew what caused a raspy voice. And so I had this tumor blocking my vocal cord, the passageway. And so I have to have surgery to remove the mass. I have to have sinus surgery. All of this, guys, pain meds every single time. I'm being crushed. This is all, everything I'm talking about happens in the span of 9 months, right? And then I had to have this surgery. It's funny how I used to say lower back, but it was rectal surgery. I had to have it twice. Horrific experience, right? And on top of all this, you know, my former wife goes out of town on a girls trip, and I have to put the dog down when she's out of town. And then all of this is happening, and I go into that depression. And God, thank God, my feet were trained, but I had curled up into the bed, called in to sick to work, and didn't want to get out of the bed, not even to watch like Netflix in the bed. Like I thought God was dealing me a shitty hand, over and over. And over, after all this work I have done for your fucking kids, after all that I devote to you, I have set up an altar in my meditation room for you. I burn sage for you so I can sit in your presence. I do all these things. I tell people about the good news, and this is what you're gonna do to me. And I'm sitting in the bed. It's the only time any spouse has gone behind my back and called my sponsor. and Marcy, she called my sponsor at the time, this guy Scott. And he called me and he sat me down and he said, boy, it's time to chop wood and carry water. You know, he said, what have you been taught to do here? This is how Scott was. I need you to do these things. You know, check in with all your sponsees. Let's get to the home group. You know, it was basic stuff. Move your feet, right? And so I am gaining a lot of weight at this time because all the surgeries and just being laid up, and I'll never forget it. This is like this whole experience is preparing me for a much darker time. And so I remember at this time I'm on crutches. I put on one of my favorite shirts and I go into the bathroom. It doesn't fit. One of my favorite shirts, man, doesn't fit. And I remember ripping it off my body like the Incredible Hulk. I was so furious. And I come out of this bathroom screaming profanities at God. Why are you doing this to me? Almost feeling like the carpenter, you know. I could imagine the carpenter on the cross saying, God, why have they forsaken me? Like, why have you done this to me? What did I do to deserve this? And then, like, it hits me a couple months ago. I play in a little poker tournament every month. And, you know, poker, any Nimrod can play a good hand, right? What's poker based on? How well you play the bad hands. Poker is entirely based on how well you play the bad hands. And I thank God for the teachers. Thank God for moving your feet, you know, training your feet. I fell into the fetal position on the floor, and I just asked God to keep me, just protect me, right? Which is crazy because you fast forward. That was between January and September of 2014. And I took that altar third step and made that decision. When I make that decision in the third step, what I'm really saying is my life's no longer my business. What Tarek wants does not matter. I don't know what God is going to do with my life. He's going to place me in one state of being and one state of circumstances, and when he's ready, he moves me to the next. I think I got something to do with the movement, and I don't. Right? And so, I talked about my dad last night, the violent, drunk, abusive, verbally, physically, put me and my brother in both in positions to have to be pretty much beat him up when we were growing up to get him off our mom. And so in my first inventory, my dad had like 17 different resentments. Each had its own page. Okay. I wrote a very thorough inventory the first time. It was the Joe and Charlie inventory. I had over 100 resentments. I don't recommend that today. This has just been my experience. It was a checklist inventory. It, clearly, I'm sitting here almost 18 years later. It worked. The type of inventory you write has really nothing to do with, you know, what we're talking about here. The form does not matter. There's just different ways of doing it. It's about the experience that's taken place between the sponsor and the sponsee and God through that process. Right? What do you guys think? The old timers before the book came out in 1939 were writing these thorough inventories. You think they even did it through the 40s and the 50s? I don't think so. I don't think so. And so my resentments towards my dad, he was an embarrassment. He was physically abusive. He was a drunk. He never remembered my birthday, never came to basketball games. He hit my mom. He hit my grandmother. He was all these things. The guy listening to my first fifth step, every time I read a resentment towards my dad, he'd say, "Terry, have you ever been physically abusive with someone you love?" Yes, I have. "Have you ever forgotten someone's birthday that you love?" "Yes, I have." "Have you ever told someone you'd be somewhere and not shown up?" "Yes, I have." "Have you ever been verbally abusive with someone that you love?" And my head started to drop. I knew that I had become my dad. My dad was alcoholic, and now after going through the steps, I knew what powerlessness was. I knew what loss of choice is. I knew what the allergy was, and I knew my father suffered from this. So for the first time in my life, I had compassion for my father. And so this is 2008, early 2008. My father and mother are now divorced. My father's drinking himself to death in a little one-bedroom condo, and I have to go make the amends. I have not had a relationship with my father for close to 15 years at this point. So I go make the amends, and this is going to come in. I might need a few minutes, but I think I'll wrap it up. So I go make the amends with my father, and we're sitting in his condo, and I'm asking him. You know, I'm acknowledging the things I did, and he actually listened to everything. Whereas when I made amends to my mom and I had my list of things, she stopped me. She didn't want to hear it all. But my father, he let me go. And I remember when I asked him what I could do to make it right, because I had not been a good son to him at all. And thank God the people that took me through the process, me and my sponsor are always going to disagree on what I'm about to say. I don't do my part. I get what Ralph says. It's, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just language. There's a subtle thing that goes on in the unconscious mind with making amends when you come out of the fourth step claiming your part. Because the problem is, can I see this piece of paper?
Yeah.
So if this is the resentment between me and my dad, right, and I'm going there to clean up my part, my part's this little corner of this piece of paper, right? And my dad's part's the rest of the piece of paper. And I have somewhere in my unconscious mind this assumption that, you know what, since I'm here to clean up my part, naturally every single person I make amends to should want to clean up their part. My part's always going to be smaller. And so I have watched people I've sponsored come out of amends with resentments. Come out of amends process with resentments because the other person didn't clean up their part. So I stay away from the parts. It's entire, you know, we set aside entirely what the other person has done. We resolutely look for our own faults and mistakes. The inventory is ours, not the other person. So if they don't exist, they don't have a part. I have 100% of what mistakes and where I've been at fault. And thank God I did that with my dad, because he fumbled through his words. But when I asked him what I could do to make it right, he said, "Will you please spend time with me?" And my toes curled in my shoes, because I didn't know if I could do it. And he said, "I want you to be happy." And so this is by the grace and mercy of God. I started going to my dad's condo on Sundays and spending time with him. That turned into going to lunch. That turned into lunch in a movie. And I started dating my dad. Okay? I started dating my dad. Right? Now, look, my stepdad is now in the picture. And he, you know, him and my mom are now married. And they know I'm hanging out with my dad. And me and my dad, movies. We got into movies, right? And I fell in love with him. I was the only person he had. My brother never reconciled with my father. And eventually my ex-wife wanted to, you know, to have a relationship with my dad. So he started coming over to Sunday dinner. Then it was Thanksgiving. And then it was Christmas. And then my mom found out. My mom invites him to Thanksgiving. My mom invites him to Christmas. My stepdad and my dad start forming a relationship. My dad gets diagnosed with cancer June of 2016. And they caught the cancer late. My brother won't help me. I'm taking my dad to chemo. I'm doing all of the doctor's appointments. I'm developing a resentment because nobody's helping me. And then my dad can't deal with the chemo anymore. And he decides he doesn't want to do it, and then the cancer spreads, and it spreads to his brain. We were at a restaurant one night, and he started to take his clothes off in the restaurant, and I was like, okay, it's gone to the brain. Yeah, and so my stepdad and my mom come to me, and they said, "Why don't you bring your dad into our home, and he can pass there." That's not possible without Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not possible without a relationship with God. And so... Oh man, I gotta get this last five. So my stepdad is helping me take care of my dad. I will never forget this. I can like see it in my vision as if they bring the palliative. He was on Medicaid or Medicare, and they bring palliative care into the house. I remember crushing up the pills, the Dilaudid and the Oxycontin and all the pills, and putting them in the syringe. And I'm sitting there crushing them, and the nurse, because in palliative care, they can't administer the medication. They just observe. And she's sitting there watching me do that. She's like, "Damn, you're good at that." A lot of practice. I'm administering all the medication to my father, and I have to change his diaper. And my stepdad walks over, and he's looking at me with tears in his eyes, and he's helping me change my dad's diapers. And I'm sitting there going, "How does this happen? What kind of human? Like, this man is helping me take care of my father. This is the type of man my stepdad is." And then, without Alcoholics Anonymous, without you people, without a relationship with God, this doesn't happen. I don't have this experience. And at the same time I'm having this experience, my former wife says she's not interested in being married to me anymore. And so I have to call this young lady here and say, "I got no place to live right now." All right? We become two ships passing in the night. I owned a recovery center, and she was HR director at Sweetwater Brewery in Atlanta. And so she had a party lifestyle, and she had made a comment in August of 2016 that she wished she wasn't married to a sober guy. She was jealous of Alcoholics Anonymous. She didn't understand why I traveled so much. She didn't understand why I had to sponsor so many guys. She didn't understand why you guys were my first phone call and not her. So she didn't want any more to do with that. And I had become a selfish prick. That's what I had become. I knew how to withhold my emotion and withhold my love as a form of punishment. Right. So I had to call Lindsay and say, "Lindsay, I got nowhere to live. I got nowhere to go." So this young lady will always hold a special place in my heart, because she let me crash in her guest bedroom for like 2 or 3 weeks, and she got to listen to me till 2 or 3 in the morning. Every night. But as I'm at her house, I'm having to go back to my parents to help take care of my dad. You know? So this is all happening at the same time. I'm going for 24 hours to my dad's. I'm trying to run a business. I'm going back to Lindsay's. Right? And then my mom and stepdad are taking over to give me a day off. Right? And I got to meditate next to my dad. I got to pray. I got to chant my prayer beads. I played music for him. I created an environment for passing. And you know what that environment, like me and my dad were clean. I had not one sliver of regret when it comes to my dad after all that we had gone through. And this is the power of the fifth step. Not the power of the amends process as much. In that fifth step, something happened. And something happened when that man asked me those questions, and I realized I'd become my father, right? The amends process also played a role, but in being able to create that environment where my dad passed, I learned something about this life that we're in. What if about everything we do in life is about preparing for that moment, preparation for death? Because what are the two belief systems that the alcoholic has? I'm not going to die. I'm going to live forever. I'm going to win the lottery. Right? I'm going to win the lottery. I'm going to live forever. Postpone. But everybody else that came around my dad, regret. His sisters came around. I felt it. My brother came around. Definitely felt it. It was there with my mom. It was there with his extended family as they were coming in. And so what I got to understand is why, you know, my dad was holding on, and like finally he let go, because I made a promise to him on his deathbed that I was going to take care of my brother. He was waiting for that promise, and he looked up at me and he took his last breath, because I heard that small voice say, you got to let him know. I didn't know if I could keep the promise. And I'm going to tell you, man, this is not, I haven't spoken to my brother. This month is 3 years I haven't spoken to my brother. And it eats my lunch, guys, when I sit in prayer and meditation. I know I made my dad a deathbed promise that I have been unable to keep. And I've reached out. I've tried. He won't talk to me. And that's where I'm at. But like the dark night of the soul, we wander out into the desert. The prayers seem to evaporate off our tongues. Meditation doesn't produce anything. We can't buy enough stuff. The material world has proven empty. And we get taken out into the desert for one reason, for God to show us God is it. That's all I have is God. But I have to go through those experiences in order to see that. You know, and that's just a story. Thank you for being patient with me. Yeah.
Thanks, Derek. It's a great story. God, you reminded me, oh my God, the freaking pony. I don't know if I'm the only one. I like got sober and then like I was like, yo, but like when I get 5 years, we gonna chill. Like it's gonna be great. It was really hard. And then I get like 5 years, I'm like, but like wait till 10. Because then I'm gonna know some shit and be flying. Nah. Because I also, and I'm gonna take it back to like a simple level, and this Tarek just made me think of a few things, but when we are a group, it's so weird. I've always found this so funny because we're all, you know, scared. Like when inventory comes up, you know, oh, scary or fifth step, and you know, but I'm different. And like, if you knew me, and I'm like, y'all, we're all reading the same book. I promise. Like everyone has the exact same stuff. I still to this day haven't heard something where I was like, well, I mean, every once in a while, like, that's a new one. But, like, there's not one time where I was like, wow, you really are different. I can't help you. That's, like, never happened. But we're all the same thinking. We're, like, really different. And, like, the sober living meeting's like an entry. Like, we're going through third step, fourth step. And it's all the same. And I laugh every time when I was in sober living. I was so pissed at this chick in IOP, and she was in my freaking house. And because she was lying. I can't believe it. You know, I was, no experience with that. But she was, like, lying. And I was so resentful. I was like, this chick. Ooh. And they're like, well, you got to let that go. And I'm like, yeah. I'm going to let that go. And I remember someone was like, you know, like, let it go. Like, throw cans out in the woods. So I'm like, oh, my God, yeah. So I'm letting these resentments go. And then the moment I saw her again, I was like, nah. You know, like, ugh. And so I give examples on the third and fourth, like, how does this happen? And there's always jokes, because there's always someone who's, like, cleaning and then just pissed off that no one thanks them enough. And then there's always someone who's like, I don't know why they got to get on me and all perfect. They got to stick up their butt. this is, it's all the same stuff, you know, like it's all the same stuff. And we go through it. And as far as the actor, like if you just do this, I'd be good. You know, like if they just would put their dishes away, like we'd be good, right? So it, even in the groups of people, we're laughing because it's kind of silly and fun and we're all the same. And this is a lot of my experience, like for, I'm going to kind of give you from beginning to end and like some simplistic terms. But here I am, even I tried so hard to let, even with that, I was telling you about that chick, and she was like, yeah, let that resentment go. I'm throwing cans, trying to, like, metaphor this stuff. And, y'all, I just can't let it go. I just can't let it go. It's just up there, whatever the saying is, it's written space for free, or whatever. But this is the power of, like, pen to paper. This is the power of, like, actually putting something down and actually sharing it with someone, which... So I'm going to kind of skip that. This is what ends up happening. So I shared with y'all that first night, even the one with my sister when I had time, right? So because all of the first ones in inventory, what I saw was, I think, the funniest thing, which was simple. Like, I'd write inventory on something that had just been pissed me off for so long, and it was usually something like, well, you know, they were just mean to me. My sponsor would be like, well, how? I'd be like, well, you know, just me. And they're like, well, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. Did anything happen? Like, a lot of them were just funny because I didn't have any, it was all of, so much of it was up here. There were some that, there were some actual things, but a lot of it was so up here. So just immediately just realizing, like, even for my family, things that I believed about my past, when I wrote it down, like I had one, my first inventory, I wrote about this chick who was resentful at because she left me. I had a story. I mean, this chick left me. She just disappeared, broke up with me, broke my heart, wrote inventory. I'm reading it. So it wasn't in the inventory because I need someone to ask me questions because I'm kind of delusional. So reading it in the fifth step and telling they're asking questions, and I was like, well, oh my God. I was like, oh, well, she did catch me cheating on her. At a night in a party, you know, and then just boom, you know, I was like, okay. So that resentment just immediately evaporated. But for whatever reason, for years, it was stuck in my head that she just left me. And that had nothing to do with it. And that had a lot to do with it. And so even, you know, the whole thing, like, if you're thinking about the spiritual awakening, right? Remember, separation, we're trying to connect. That's it. I just want to connect. That's all the spirit wants to do is to just connect. And I'm a big fan of families. Just my thing. I kind of dig it. I'm like, dude, you got family members. I'm very clear. Anytime I sit with anybody, I'm very clear that it's someone's daughter, that it's someone's sister, that it's someone's best friend, that it's someone's caretaker, that it's someone. And I've got a lot of someones in my life. And a lot, just like a lot of folks in here, I know y'all got close people that you really care about, and I know they're not doing well. And I've had family members in my life not doing well, and it means the world to me that I know people that would do anything to help them. I mean, if they're, like, ready. They're not. But, so I'm very clear that the people in front of me, they are me and I am them, and they are someone's wife, they're someone's daughter. It's very important. So I had no idea over all the time what was the experience of connection and mending that would happen. And so I was raised in North Carolina, very Southern, and I'm not even raised in a church. But you don't need to be raised in a church to in the South. You know, you could just, like, be Southern and be like, well, might as well have been raised in a church. It just seeps in you. Like, it's like cultural, you know what I mean? So, like, even my folks weren't like, we're going to church. But I'm like, the same kind of terror of, like, you know, I'm gay, I'm different, always lived with that. It was never, it was not cool. It still isn't that cool, but it's not a good thing. I was terrified. it was not accepted. I was not accepted. And so it starts, and I, you know, kind of see all this stuff. Like, I can't let resentments go. I'm writing the inventory, doing the fifth step. Some of that cool stuff I told you happened where I realized, wow, I'm a crazy person. Of course they left. I, like, totally did this. So it was powerful. I mean, just immediately things shift, right? And then I continue to go through the process over time, and this is where the, for me, you know, about 5 years, I told y'all, wrote inventory of my sister. We were not close, had not been close for a long time. Same with my dad. I burned a lot. And so at 5 years, when I wrote inventory, and the consideration was, you know, I was like, well, my sister, I'm resentful because she doesn't accept me for being gay and who I am. And it never occurred to me that I'd never asked her. But I saw the impact of that belief, and the impact of that belief was I was very distant from her, very separate, very surface level, very separate from her. And it just never occurred to me until I wrote and talked about it that I was like, oh my gosh, I have no idea. I really don't know. So when I went to make amends for all the separation in our relationship, and we talked about it, and like I told y'all, she just cried and said, all I've ever wanted is to be close to you. And we've been extremely close since then. And with the another thing I've realized, too, is in the things that I can't let go is what the power of, like, wow, if I'm just truthful and honest and I'm writing it in black and white, because Mark Houston always say, you either put it in black and white or you live it in color. And I love that saying, right? Because if it's not here and I'm not sharing it and it's not black and white, it is real life for me. I'm actually believing it, so therefore I'm actually ripple affecting this whole thing. And so with writing it down, and I get to see it on me, for many years I believe, you know, that I believe that you don't like me, I believe that I'm not good enough, I believe all these things. And the consideration of another angle. What if I looked at it from a completely different angle? The book talks about it, and people in my life, the teachers and sponsors and all this. What's really crazy is there's so many things that I believed, and they were like a snake, you know, like it's going to bite me. And it's all underneath in the resentments that's in the fear and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then once it's on paper, and I can actually talk about it, and people are open and allow themselves to share their stories and all this. And then, man, holy shit, it was a rope the whole time. It was a rope the whole time. And I'm not good at letting things go on my own. But when I get in touch with reality or see a different angle or allow someone to disturb me or be open-minded, it lets go of me. And then I can experience reality, I can experience present or laughter, you know. So then a big resentment, obviously, you know, or thing I was up against for a long time was my family. You know, the resentment is they don't love me for who I am, right? We don't talk about it. I'm like, might as well just be in the military. It's a don't ask, don't tell. I could never be myself with them because I'm scared I'm going to get disowned from my family. So I was always really torn, like really torn, y'all. Because if I tell him, my mom is going to have to choose between her daughter and her husband. And they've been high school sweethearts. So they've been together a long time. And y'all, I wrote this inventory, and I've written it many times, but it hit me, you know, 5-6 years sober. And it was like, well, what if I want them to love me just as I am so bad, like just as I am. And so the consideration out of the fifth step, black and white, was like, well, Lens, what if you love them just as they are? Like, what if you loved them with the beliefs that they have? What if you loved them because you love them? What if they don't have to do anything other than be themselves? Could you do that? And y'all, that was a teaching and an assignment that lasted for years, because I'd never looked at anything that way. I just want you, if you loved me as I am, then I'd be okay. But what if I loved you just as you are? What if I therefore realize I am okay? Does that make sense? So that chipping away, I just kept chipping away at it. And that was the whole teaching, was the whole time for years was just love them just as they are. Love them with their, you know, because my mom's like, you're going to go to hell. I'm like, oh, I've been there. I mean, you know, like, you know, the whole thing. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, just a constant process. It wasn't just with my family. You know, I'm talking about all the time. And I had the same thing. I had no idea that throughout this whole time I'm starting to unlearn so much. You know, so many snakes are actually ropes. Am I open to actually being courageous enough to actually see it, to grab it, to touch it, to interact with the fact that maybe it's not a snake? That all comes from my creator, courage and help from others. And Derek talked about, like, man, God, I've done all this for you. I have a magnet on my fridge. It said, God, where is my pony? And it's a joke and it's a reminder, because I spent a ton of time in recovery being like, man, this ain't right. Is there anyone here that's just like, gosh, I'm not good at romantic relationships? Me. Shocker. Okay. So, man, I do all this stuff for God. I'm over here being a freaking spiritual warrior, and about every female I get with is gonna, it just doesn't work out. Lies, cheats, and I'm like, God, where's my pony? You know, like, where is, this is not right. This can't be right. I'm a good person, you know, like, I'm a good person. Why does this always happen to me? Tarek's over here like, where, you know, all of our troubles are of our own making. I'm like, ugh, you know, greatest gift, so, right? We need to hear all of that stuff because it's true. And I'm about to hopefully kind of touch to where I don't, it's because I don't know I already have the pony. You know, I just forget that I'm already have it. I really think it's supposed to come to me, but it's always been within me. So fast forward a little bit. You know, I'm chopping away at this, loving my folks just as they are. And everybody, right? That's my whole game now. It's our game, like teaching. A few years ago, Jamie and I met in 2017, fall in love. It's great. Of course it's, I mean, this shit, we'd be a little toxic, you know what I'm saying? Just a little bit. I mean, gotta be a little toxic. You know, we'll get into, you know, why for me in my alcoholism and selfishness, self-centeredness, just like Tarek said, I'm inconsiderate. And it's not complicated. You know, I'm like, Jamie's like, you're inconsiderate. I was like, you're right. I didn't even consider you. Like, that just never crossed my mind. So I get it honest. But we're together for a while, and years ago, I'm having a great day. I walk in, and Jamie is like, you know, I think I want to go to the FBI. I was like, far out. And she's like, but I don't think I want you to come with me. I was like, excuse me? What? And, man, everything crashed, right? I mean, it just wrecked me. I was so sad. And it was just another, you know, tie in here. But that whole practice for years of, I'm going to love my folks just as they are. You know, like, they don't have to love me as I am. It's my job to love them, and it's my job to love myself, allow God to love me, allow y'all to love me, but that is not anyone else's job. Like, they can be just as they are, and I can be as I am. No idea that this was all going to crash, and it's something, and this is all a byproduct of the whole kind of kit and caboodle here with the steps and God and chopping wood and carrying water, is I ended up in that process that Jamie and I would split for a little bit. I just called my dad. I'm so scared. I've always been so scared of this man. He terrifies me, as he should. It's my dad. And I just said, Dad, I'm gay, and I'm just so scared that you're going to, I can't even remember how I worded it. I really can't. But I just, something in me one day randomly was just like, you got to call your dad. And I've never called my dad for anything that isn't like business. I called him and I just said, hey, Jamie and I might be splitting, and I'm really scared. And I'm really scared. And I that you won't love me or that you don't love me. And I've never talked about this with him. I'm not kidding. Like, my dad is so Southern and scary. Like, he doesn't even acknowledge that, like, I'm a girl. You know what I mean? It's just like, you good? And he just point blank just was like, Lens, I love you so much. I am so proud of you. I don't care who you're with or who you're not with. I'm just so proud of you. And I had never heard that. And I spent many, many years believing a lie that I was too scared. And it's okay, but I was too scared to actually investigate, maybe find the reality in it. And I found many more between that. But the crazy thing is I also didn't know that I was going to, the pony thing. Because the crazy thing is Jamie's like, I'm sleeping. And I was heartbroken, y'all. I was so sad. But it was the first time that I was like, but I'm okay. I didn't know that was the pony. I didn't know the whole time that the pony and what I'm looking for and all this stuff is actually just the fact that, oh, my God, I can actually just be okay with whatever happens in God's world. Right? So you can stay, you can go, anything can happen. And I'm just I just didn't know that I had a full relationship with God. And I didn't know I had the pony the whole time. I didn't even know. Remember last night, I'm telling you all this stuff. I was like, I didn't know any of this till like way later. I had no idea that I had the pony. And the whole time, the whole pony was the fact that I'm okay. That I'm okay. That I can be okay regardless, that I can be with you, that I get to be truthful, that I have access to courage and to different things within me to be able to, like, reconnect. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that I'd be able to, one, get married, two, bring a wife home to my Southern-ass family, and three, for them to embrace them more than me, which that's actually, them embracing Jamie more than me is totally fair. I'm a little unhinged.
I needed it.
Do it.
I needed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She woke up to a whole ass other lie. But she did. And so hopefully, you know, in that, when it comes to 4 and 5, and I also didn't know that that's actually the big preparation for 10 either. Because another thing that we get up until then, I don't kind of skip, don't want to skip too far ahead, but all of those little things, right, in the fifth step where you kind of learn, you know, oh my God, you're like so self-consumed, right, and you got all these defects and all this kind of hoopla, and Tarek mentioned playing poker, right, so what's really amazing is that we kind of start to get our cards, we start to get the deck, you know, and you got spades in there. I got a lot of spades, but we don't like showing our spades. You know, we really don't. We want to act like we just got hearts and diamonds, but you never win at any game without really knowing the whole deck. If you don't know where your clubs are and you don't know where your spades are, you're not going to be able to, like, win at the game of life. So all of this knowledge, like experience and understanding, starting to get in touch with those really dark spots about ourselves, you know, and those really tough things, those things that are just like, man, I just want to buckle at the knees because I'm so scared, or I'm, you know, all that stuff. We start building our deck. Because even for a long time, I believed that, and, you know, it's tough for me. I'm not that good talking about 6 and 7 just because it's so vast and it's almost the whole thing. So even when I'm meeting with newcomers, I'm like, we're going to do exactly what it says here. We're going to move on because you're going to kind of be doing that in the background for like ever. It's kind of like the iOS. So it's too much. So we're just going to just like keep it simple. But if you think about it, like, okay, we're building this deck so I can actually possibly, instead of resisting all these things, it's like, no, this is a spade of mine. And God, can we make friends with this spade of mine? It's your spade. It's our spade now. It's our club. It's our heart. It's our diamond. You know, and it's okay. What if I could show up? And it's really given me the tools and the clarity and stuff to take into the rest of the steps. So 10, 11, we can actually, like, hey, instead of me being like, so it's really common. So Jamie, even like in relationships, like, you have hurt my feelings because you showed up late. My first reaction is, oh God, ain't that deep, right? Why? Because if I just said, gosh, I'm so sorry, I got tied up and I lost track of time and I'm sorry that hurt you. Oh my God, that's like unconsciously admitting I was wrong and I have to feel bad. So a lot of it over time is just continuing to be okay with the fact that, man, I mess up a lot and I can own it and that's okay. I'm going to make a lot of mistakes. I've got spades, I got clubs, but I got hearts and I got diamonds. I'm not going to hold those cards and pretend I don't have them. I'm put them on the table, and that really starts with 4, goes into 5, and it doesn't stop. And the whole idea is that we continue to get that deck and the fact that we show our clubs, we show our spades, so they don't get hidden, because that's where they rot and get all weird and sneaky and disgusting. You know, where it's like, man, I got tons of them. So does everybody else. But the only way for me to, quote unquote, win, which is actually just being truthful, just being myself, because I really don't think it gets any more spiritual. What God, you know, I'm like, oh, it's just for Lindsay to be Lindsay, Tarek to be Tarek, Jamie to be Jamie, Stephen to be Stephen, for us to try to help folks, be honest and laugh some. But I can't do that. I will be separate if I can't play with the whole deck. I'll continue to lose thinking by just throwing hearts and freaking diamonds, I'm a win. I ain't gonna win. I need you to know me, right? I need you to know me. And so the 12-step process and the circle and triangle has done nothing in my experience, and a lot of folks in my life done nothing but to continue to reconnect me to not only what's real within me, but to also, God, my friends and family ain't nothing. I mean, holy smokes, I have, like, that's the whole gig. When I meet someone and they got a family, they got kids, I'm like, yo, that's the deal right there. That's the deal, is to be able to continue to connect to your friends, your family, yourself, to others, to be able to be of service. And watching families reconnect is, it's I don't know, it don't get, that's crazy. Like, it's actually crazy to me, still to this day. Still to this day blows my mind. I can call my dad and he's like, how's Jamie doing? That blows my mind. And I spent most of my life thinking that would never be possible. Just like I never thought I could just, I'd be myself. Also never thought you'd hang out with me if you knew that, like, my hobbies are like puzzling and carving wood. You know what I mean? Like, I can be myself. So, all right, that's it. Thanks for letting me share.
No, thanks.